The first case on our calendar is 03-114, the Performing Arts School of Metropolitan Toledo versus Thomas Zeno, Tax Commissioner, Mr. Farron.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, this case involves two issues. One is a merit issue, and the other is a jurisdictional issue. The merit issue is whether real property owned by a for-profit entity and leased with a view to profit to a community school qualifies for the public schoolhouse exemption contained in Revised Code Section 5709.07A1. The jurisdictional issue is one raised by the court, and that question is whether the community school, as a lessee of the property, had standing to file the exemption application under Revised Code Section 15.27. The facts in this case are not in dispute and are fairly simple. A for-profit limited partnership owned property and leased it to the Performing Arts School, a community school under Ohio law. The lease was for an initial 39-month term for a rental of $195,000. There were two options to renew, each for 5 years. The first option for a rental of $330,000, the second for a rental of $360,000. The community school filed the application in 2000, requesting an exemption for the property for the tax year 2000. In 2001, the application was attempted to be amended to add the owner of the property to the application. The exemption was claimed under Revised Code Section 5709.07A1, which exempts from taxation public schoolhouses, the books and furniture in them, and the ground attached to them that's necessary for the proper occupancy, use, and enjoyment of the property, and not leased or otherwise used with a view to profit. This exemption provision, as this court has repeatedly stated, must be strictly construed against exemption, and the exemption can be allowed only if it falls clearly within the terms of that statute. The property at issue does not fall within the terms of the exemption statute for two reasons. The first reason is that this building, which is owned by a private company, is not a public schoolhouse. The second reason is that the property is used with a view to profit. Therefore, it fails two portions of the exemption statute.
Are you going to speak to the jurisdictional issue, the point 27 issue?
That was the second issue. I can address that first. The the statute authorizing persons to file exemptions or applications seeking exemption of property is 5715.27A. That statute specifically states that the owner of the property may file an application seeking exemption for that property. It does not state a lessee, a person with a beneficial interest, a person with an equitable interest, or any other interest in the property. It specifically restricts the person who can file the application to the owner of the property.
Isn't that the predicate issue then for us?
That is a predicate issue, Your Honor. And the main reliance that the school has raised is the Cleveland State versus University versus Perk decision, which held that, in that case, Cleveland State University, who owned land and leased these mobile school units from a private owner and placed them on the university land, whether or not the university had standing. One of the issues was whether the university had standing to raise an exemption application with respect to those buildings. The court held that it did. But the important point is that the statute that was in existence at the time was much different than the current statute. At the time, the statute provided that any person who's authorized to file complaints before the Board of Revision can file an application for exemption. That decision was in 1971. In 1982, in Senate Bill 262, the statute was amended to its current form where it specifically said the owner of the property could file an application for exemption.
The other parties contend that the intent of the statute was to limit a whole group of sort of non-related folks, but that owner should still be interpreted loosely to include equitable ownership. And we have, they cite a whole host of decisions from the Board of Tax Appeals that have given that interpretation, and the legislature has done nothing to change that. What precedent do we give that? They've really pretty much interpreted to include leaseholds in many, many instances.
Your Honor, the Board of Tax Appeals has gone so far as to say somebody with a five-year lease qualifies as an owner of the property. I submit that that's just unsupportable by any decision of this court. And the point is, this court in the Victoria Plaza case in 1991 specifically defined or construed the term owner used in an analogous provision, 5715.19, which authorizes persons to file valuation complaints before the Board of Revision. It uses the term owner. And in fact, it was the 5715.19 cases that the Board had relied upon in finding that a lessee could be an owner. In Victoria Plaza, this court rejected that argument. It specifically stated that owner under the statute means the holder of legal title. It rejected the argument that a person who held an equitable interest could qualify. I submit that that case is controlling with respect to the analogous provision in 5715.27.
The Board of Tax Appeals opinion doesn't seem to indicate that this issue was even raised in the Board of Tax Appeals, was it?
It was not, Your Honor. It was raised by the court in a request for additional argument. With respect to the merit issue, the first issue is whether or not this property constituted a public schoolhouse. The statute exempts public schoolhouses, and the position of the tax commissioner is that that requires that the property be owned by a public entity. In this case, it would be a local board of education. In construing the term public used in the public property exemption in the next statute, 5709.08, this court has interpreted public to mean, to qualify as public property, that property must be owned by the state or a political subdivision.
But counsel, is there any dispute about the use?
There is no dispute about the use, Your Honor. It was used, at least during the time period at issue, by the community school as their facility. It was a recreational facility, parking lot, and the building in which they operated their school.
And that would be a public school use?
It would be a use by a public school. That's correct.
The lease, did it make a contingency provision for real estate taxes?
It did. As I recall, the lease required the school to pay the real estate taxes. And in fact, they paid all of the expense, everything that maintenance, repairs, everything would be imposed upon the school.
So the owner has transferred that responsibility to the lessee.
That's correct. Well, the lessee has to pay the owner. The owner is responsible for the tax. Contractually, the lessee has to pay the lessor.
And so the benefit or the burden is going to fall 100% on the school.
Well, that's assuming that wasn't taken into consideration in the rental amount by the private lessor.
Well, I thought you said the rent clearly indicated that the lessee pay.
The lessee pays.
And would it not be reasonable to assume that the parties contemplated that the lessee would seek an exemption?
Well,
that there would be no burden, but that was going to be up to the lessee to carry the day.
Well, that's possible, but it's also possible they thought they may have to pay tax because they had that provision in there saying that the community school shall pay the real estate taxes. It may well be that they assumed that because it was a privately owned building, it would be subject to tax. This, in the public property exemption statute, this court has at least on two occasions, in the Dayton Metropolitan Housing case and in the recently in the Columbus City School District case, found that property to be exempt as public property must be owned by a political subdivision. The court, the Board of Tax Appeals rejected that argument, relying primarily on the Gerke versus Purcell case. In Gerke, this court interpreted the term public schoolhouse that was used in two places, one in the Constitution and one in an exemption statute that was passed approximately a year after the Constitution was adopted. With respect, it was an exemption claim for a parochial school. And in construing the term public schoolhouse as used in the Constitution, the court held that it meant that the term meant ownership. It had to be a schoolhouse owned by the public. And the rationale used by the court is equally compelling in this case. The court reasoned that if the building only had to be used as a public school, the building could be exempted even if it were owned by a private company and were used to make a profit. That's precisely the result that would happen in this case if the property is exempted. The limited partnership is a private entity, and it is leasing this property with a view to profit. However, for reasons that are
Counsel, I'm still struggling trying to think through the economic burdens here. This sounds like the typical triple net lease.
Yes.
In which the owner of the property is going to get standard rent of the neighborhood, and the owner of the property, in terms of their economic considerations, whether the lessee can rent that and not have to pay taxes, or rent it and have to pay taxes, it makes no difference to them in terms of their economic considerations. They're charging the rent of the general neighborhood or region, and to part of that is transferring the tax burden, and that's what they would do with any other tenant, presumably. So now it seems in terms of the economics that you're arguing, well, we should put this real estate tax burden on this school.
Well, Your Honor, what I'm arguing is that the General Assembly specifically provided that property that is used with a view to profit, and that would include a use by a lessor who clearly uses property it leases in its business, entitled to exemption.
I thought the bigger problem that the General Assembly struggled with over time was churches and others who buy a piece of real estate and there's no worshiping going on there. There are supermarkets there, and there are all kinds of other things, and that those have been the challenges in terms of crafting a statute that makes sense to the general purpose of what ought to be tax exempt and what shouldn't be.
Well, Your Honor, early on in the Gerke case, the court specifically considered the concern where a private lessor leases it to a school, and the court said the statute requires that property not be used, that building not be used with a view to profit. And a use by a lessor, it's private property that is leased by a private entity with a view to make a profit. And that's simply not the type of property or use that qualifies for an exemption under the statute. And that's what the General Assembly has held. I would like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrin.
Thank you.
Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Chuck Collins, and I represent the Performing Arts School of Metropolitan Toledo. Your Honor, I'd like to follow up on a question that you asked about this concern of a triple net lease. And what I will be referencing is the supplement that was filed in this particular aspect. which contains the application which is promulgated by the Department of Taxation and Equalization. And in that application, it on its face refutes this argument that only a fee title owner can submit an application for exemption of real property. In fact, if you look through that application, it begins, and again, this is the form promulgated by the Department of Taxation and Equalization, which is required to be completed for the exemption, begins by asking who is the applicant name. That's how it opens. And then the form continues to read, title to the property is in the name of whom? The next question reads, if the title holder is different from the applicant, please explain. The next question then, or the following question reads, does the applicant have a lease or land contract for this property? It's very evident on the face of the application that the Department of Taxation and Equalization considered that a lease owner, or at least a lease owner would be the term, have the opportunity to file for this application for exemption.
Why couldn't that application merely be an information gathering document so that the people who are in charge of reviewing the application have all the facts before them and then determine the appropriateness of the owner versus a lessee versus whomever is making the application? I can't see where you're saying that's a definitive sanction of someone other than the owner making application.
Certainly the information could be, or it could be used to gather information, but if that were the case, then the objections would be made at certain levels, including the tax commissioner, including the Board of Tax Appeals. And this has happened on multiple times at the Board of Tax Appeals, where they have determined in 570907A cases that a lessee has standing to file an application. So I agree that the information should be provided to the tax commissioner on the application.
Are we bound by the practice of the Board of Tax Appeals, or should we be bound by the statute, the clear word of the statute, owner?
You should be bound by the statute, and you should be bound by what the statute intends to do.
Why should we define or apply or define the word owner as anything other than the person who owns the property?
Because the term owner is not just fee title owner. You can be an equitable owner. You can have ownership interests that aren't fee title, Your Honor.
Is it possible that the owner, the fee simple owner of a property, piece of property, may not wish to have it exempted from tax for some reason? Maybe it's a piece of parcel property, it's part of a portfolio, and for some reason they don't want to have it exempted.
Well, that
why,
may
why
well
should
be.
Why should a lessee be able to control the tax status of a piece of property that someone else owns?
I think that the reason would be exactly what was raised earlier, that if they have a lease that requires them to be responsible for the payment of taxes, then they should have the opportunity to exempt that from taxes.
But the statute doesn't say that. That's the problem. I mean, that can all be worked out in a contract between the owner and the lessee. The statute doesn't provide for that, all that sort of reading into it, does it? The word owner?
The statute says owner, and I do agree with that.
If we define the word owner here as it's undefined, they're just the word owner. What happens to other cases that we see where the word owner is at issue, and not a tax case, but just the word owner is the issue? Are we bound by this broader definition of owner because we've defined it that way in this case?
Well, I think that definition, it would not be defined for the first time in this case. I think the longstanding precedent in this court on lien issues, on other property issues, will acknowledge that the term owner does not encompass solely fee title ownership.
That's what I was going to ask you. Has owner been defined in this broad way that you are asking us to define it?
Yes, it has, and those cases are cited in our. In fact, that issue was addressed quite well in the case that follows this, involving Cleveland Clinic Foundation. If you reference their brief, which I will not take the time to go over again, they talk at length of how the word ownership by the Ohio Supreme Court and other decisions of this state encompasses not only fee title ownership. There are aspects of equitable ownership. And one of the aspects that was addressed earlier on this seminal issue that we have to get past is this concern of legislative history. We'll acknowledge that the tax commissioner has looked at the legislative history and says that it's clear that this provides that only the owner, which they interpret to be the equitable owner, has the opportunity to do this.
Well, Counselor, why was the owner then added in a belated manner past the filing deadline?
An abundance of caution, Your Honor. That truly was the reason that this issue arose. When the application was initially filed, after all the research and multiple Board of Taxation decisions and the decision of this court in PERC that said the owner of, that it need not be the fee title of an owner of a building under 571527, the statute that we relied upon in order for our standing, this court had said you don't have to be the fee title in order to be the applicant.
And would the, had the owner been the only applicant, and by that I mean the for-profit,
Gomez Enterprises in this particular
would
case.
Would they have prevailed here by themselves for the status of the exemption?
Oh, I think so, absolutely. Because, in fact, that issue was not raised. After the amendments were made, the Board of Tax Appeals found in favor of not only the fee title owner, but also the applicant as well, the Performing Arts School of Metropolitan Toledo.
Well, Counsel, let's, let me follow up on Justice O'Connor's question. Let's assume that this procedural issue is not here. It was, in fact, waived up to this point. And let's assume it was done cleanly. That the lease said this is a triple net, and the lessee is responsible. But the lessor will, since the lessee is a school and believes it is entitled to an exemption from real estate, the lessor will cooperate in filing the necessary forms to get the request for exemption going and participate in the process to the extent required. If that's out of the way, Mr. Ferentz still argues that your client would lose and should lose.
And I wholeheartedly disagree. The issue before this court is not an issue of community schools. Community schools are public schools. That is written specifically in the statute by the General Assembly when it authorized the creation of community schools. The General Assembly said that community schools created pursuant to this chapter are public schools. This is not an issue about community schools. This is an issue about public schools. The Gerke decision
well,
that was
signed. I think his argument goes off in a different direction. He doesn't dispute it's a community school or it's being used for a school purpose, but his argument is because the owner of the underlying fee encumbered by the lease is still in business for profit, that is an absolute bar to the lessee and getting an exemption.
And I understand his argument, and I wholeheartedly disagree. This court in Gerke, 130 years ago, looked at this issue, and he is correct that that case first looked at the constitutional aspect. In the Constitution of Ohio, well,
Counselor, in Gerke, it was owned by the entity seeking the exemption.
That is correct, which was
not what we have here.
Okay.
So there is a pretty glaring distinction to be made.
Understood. And the argument is that the owner of this property is a for-profit entity, that owner uses the property with a view to a profit. However, the longstanding cases of the Board of Tax Appeals, Cleveland State, and also Bexley Village at the appellate court said, first of all, with that issue of a view to a profit in Bexley Village and the BTA cases say, it's not the ownership, it's the use of the property that is inspected when you are determining whether it is used with a view to a profit. It's the use, not the ownership. Now, as regards the public schoolhouse, this court in Cleveland State said that aspect of whether it's used with a view to profit, that doesn't even apply to the schoolhouse itself. At most, that applies to the land connected with it. And anyone who drives by the Performing Arts School of Metropolitan Toledo, and as has been stipulated, the use of that property is a public school. It's a community school. The longstanding precedent that existed before this case came to this court was when determining whether property sought to be exempted is entitled to the exemption, the determination is the use of that property, not the ownership. We do not dispute that Gomez...
Isn't the presumption there that it's a public use owned by a public entity?
Not at all, Your Honor, because there are other statutes that address that specific issue. In fact, if you look at 570908, that deals with real and tangible personal property belonging to states or the United States. 570912 talks of real and personal property belonging to institutions for charitable purposes. 570907 talks about what we're dealing with here, real property not used with a view to a profit. So ownership is addressed in other sections of the revised code.
And the ownership in the other sections of the revised code are a state or federal government or a charitable institution, neither of which are present in your situation. It is a for-profit realty owner who is leasing this and putting money in their pocket and seeking to avoid the payment of taxes on it.
Agree. And in those other sections, specifically belonging to requires fee ownership. And we're not arguing that. In 08 and 12, those require fee ownership. However, for 570907 does not require fee ownership. And realistically, let's look at what happens when these community schools are formed. They're not going to have the long-standing tax base that other public schools have. And so a community school that is a public school, absent this statute being interpreted where the use is determinative and not the ownership, how are they ever going to operate public schools? They don't have the long-standing tax base. They don't have the ability to own these schools. The legislature, when it authorized the creation of community schools, says you are authorized to go out and contract for services to acquire facilities. The overwhelming majority of these community schools, due to their infancy, had to realistically lease property. And if the leased property is not determined based upon its use rather than its ownership, then these public schools are not entitled to the same exemption that all other public schools in the state of Ohio enjoy.
Counselor, it's not the public school that has to pay the taxes. It's the real estate owner who is making a profit on the ownership and the leasing of that property. It's not a penalty against a community school versus a public school. It is an obligation imposed by statute upon the owner of a piece of real estate.
Well, I think that the realistic workings of this are one, that it is a penalty on the community schools because they don't have that tax base to establish these schools that were authorized by the charter. But again, the concern
is... But aren't they using public dollars for the enrollment of their students?
Absolutely. And why should those public dollars, once provided
to
the community school...
And how did those public dollars come about? From a tax base?
That's correct.
Okay.
And my argument, Your Honor, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but the argument is that these are funded, like all other public schools, through public monies. And this court in Kearney 40, 50 years ago said, we don't want to get into this circular situation where a public entity, a public school that's funded by tax dollars, then pays back a portion of that in tax payments. We don't want to get into this robbing Peter to pay Paul situation. They're public schools, and again, for the statute that's at issue, it has long been held that it is the use of the property and not the ownership of the property that determines whether the lands connected with them are used with a view to a profit. The public schoolhouses, of which this is, are automatically entitled to the exemption. Any other questions I can answer, Your Honors? Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Collins. Mr. Farron, you've saved almost 50 seconds of your time, which is close to a minute, I guess, isn't it?
Counselor, let me ask you before you get started here, would the Gomez property owner have been entitled to an exemption had he applied?
No, for the reasons we state in the merit part of our argument. Gomez, first of all, was that the property was not a public schoolhouse because it was owned by Gomez. Secondly, Gomez was using it with a view to profit, which also is a requirement under the exemption statute. Very quickly, I'd point out that in Victoria Plaza, this court specifically found that an owner of an equitable interest was not an owner of the property for purposes of where that term is used with reference to land or buildings. With respect to the reliance on Cleveland State, as I indicated earlier, that was based on a statute much different than the current statute. The statute did not restrict the person who could file an application to the owner. In Weir versus Day, back in 1878, this court noted that all public schools are vested in the boards of education. In those days, particularly the days around when these statutes were enacted, clearly it was understood that the public schools were those that were owned by the boards of education. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Fair. And the case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.